Good morning. It's a pleasure to be here. Welcome to the foundation session. It's a pleasure to be here. My name is Jeff Wolze. I'm a principal program manager in the Cloud and Enterprises division, and it's a pleasure to be here to talk to you about in the foundation session about the cloud, optimizing Windows servers, System Center, and much, much more. I know some people are still trickling in from the keynote. I know it's quite a bit of a walk over there. Please feel free to come on in here. You know, it was interesting. I just got. If you just saw the keynote, I was just actually a part of it, and it's an interesting challenge doing the keynote, because quite honestly, we have literally hundreds of new features and technologies and very little time to show anything. So we can show a few things in the keynote, but here in the foundation session, you know, one of the goals here is to take this a level deeper and to talk about the things we're doing in software-defined compute, software-defined storage, software-defined networking, and all up how we think about cloud in the Microsoft Cloud platform. So cloud is obviously huge to us. You've heard us talking about cloud and mobility, mobility and cloud, and we want to make sure that everyone is very clear and understands our strategy around cloud. And it's something that continues to resonate with everyone that we talk to. It's about having that consistent experience, that consistent platform, that consistent APIs. The Microsoft Cloud is about enabling the best cloud for whenever and wherever it makes business sense for you. There are plenty of folks that say, you know what, I have my on-premises infrastructure, I'm comfortable with that, I'm going to stick with that, but yeah, I'm sticking my toe in the water, I'm already taking advantage of hybrid capabilities, I'm taking advantage of Office 365, and I'm interested in doing a lot more. And as I look at new things like operational insights or taking advantage of connectivity to Azure and taking advantage of, wow, massively scalable virtual machines, massively scalable performance, and all of the new capabilities and services up there, they realize they want to do more. So we're interested in making sure that we give you all of those capabilities and providing that consistent platform for us for cloud. You know, one of the interesting things about cloud is for the longest time, people have equated cloud with virtualization and virtualization with cloud. And as someone who's worked on hypervisors for a majority of their career, I can tell you, look, hypervisors are cool. Virtualization is cool, but it's not cloud. And there are plenty of people out there trying to sell a hypervisor still as cloud and saying, well, you virtualize it, so you're in cloud. No, you haven't. Okay, you've done one very small part of it. It's a much bigger piece of the puzzle. Okay, we look at it very holistically. From a development standpoint, how can you write applications that can run anywhere on any cloud, whether I'm doing it on-premises or up in Azure or in a service provider? How do I think about management? How am I managing holistically? Not just virtual machines, but my applications. How am I doing automation? Is that automation portable? How am I thinking about management in the context of all of the devices, the services, the users that are in my environment? Identity. There were some staggering numbers that were mentioned in the keynote in terms of Azure Active Directory and how powerful it is. And Azure Active Directory is something that we have seen just tremendous amount of adoption. It's just over a year old, and people are adopting Azure Active Directory in droves. We're doing over 18 billion authentications a week. Okay, so we're seeing tremendous adoption of that. And identity with Azure with Active Directory on-premises is pretty much the canonical way to do it. And now being able to federate it up with Azure Active Directory makes it a no-brainer. From a data standpoint, you know, we've been doing SQL Server, but we also have support for MySQL. And we want to make sure that we are the best data platform out there. You saw Mark Rusinovich today in the keynote show some massive performance gains in terms of virtual machines, massive size gains in terms of scalability of those virtual machines. Well, what's interesting about this is from a development standpoint, it affects us throughout Microsoft. Azure's taking advantage of those capabilities, but in Windows Server, we are powering Azure. So we need to make sure Azure gives us requirements, and we need to make sure that we're continually investing in Windows Server to make it the best platform for our cloud. And guess what? You get all those benefits as well. So we'll be talking about that as well. And then finally, from a virtualization standpoint, yes, having a common, consistent hypervisor. Hyper-V runs in our public cloud in Azure, and it's the same hypervisor that we provide in Windows Server. So it makes that easy for mobility, for agility. When we look at innovation, literally Azure innovation everywhere. And this is something that actually started with Satya before he became the CEO when he was in running the cloud and enterprise division. He talked about the virtuous cycle. And he was could not be more right about this. Because what's happening is we develop new features in Windows Server, and guess what? Those are started in Windows Server, those get consumed in Azure. Azure comes and says, you know what, we want to make some changes, we want to make some, and guess what, Azure makes those changes, and guess what, those go into Windows Server. So what's happening is this virtuous engineering cycle is constantly happening. One is feeding the next. And what it means is we are delivering features on a faster cadence than ever. Whoops. Okay, on a faster cadence than ever. And at the same time, we want to maintain that consistency, starting with the Azure Pack. I demonstrated this in the keynote today. A lot of people don't realize this, and I have to be very explicit about it in the keynote, but what I'm showing in the Azure Pack is literally code from Azure we are giving to you. And it's so that you can run it on premises, so that you can manage it with your own infrastructure, you can manage it, and you're taking advantage of Windows Server and System Center and the knowledge you already have, but now you can run your own cloud in an Azure consistent way. So that your admins can define services, they can define roles, they can define plans, they can apply policy, they can apply billing policy, all of these things, and then your consumers internally then can take advantage of those services. So Azure Pack is a way for us to give you that consistency, API consistency, experience consistency, and it's not just IaaS. It's not just, hey, we're gonna give you a bag of bits and say, hey, you can go do some virtual machines. It's actually, no, it's platform as a service too. Our websites are PaaS. Our SQL servers, MySQL, that's PaaS. We're actually interested in much more than IaaS. IaaS is really cool, don't get me wrong, but we want to make sure we're giving you a very rich experience there. From an infrastructure standpoint, again, that consistency and that connectivity, a lot of the features that have been going into Windows Server have been very much reflective of the requirements that we've had in Azure. And now we're about to see in this next release where Azure is now going to be dropping some very big code into Windows Server, where we're going to be taking advantage of the fact that, guess what? We have this network controller that runs up in Azure. We have load balancers that run up in Azure. And guess what? That's all software. That's all software-defined networking. Well, what if we took those load balancers, those network controllers, and said, you know what? We're going to put them in Windows Server so you get those too. That's a very powerful statement because those network controllers, those load balancers have been running in production, running millions and millions of workloads. They have already been tested because they've been running in production. Guess what? You get to reap the benefits. So there's a tremendous change evolving at Microsoft. It means you're going to get code faster, you're going to get software faster, you're going to be able to embrace new scenarios faster as part of this virtuous cycle. Connectivity. We have a lot of different ways that you can connect in these hybrid scenarios. Disaster recovery is something we released last year, been extremely popular. Backup. I showed one today in the keynote, the new Cloud Witness. For a lot of people, it may be a minor feature, but it was interesting. We looked on Twitter, and there were a lot of people that jumped out and said, oh my gosh, Cloud Witness in the cloud? That's awesome. That's exactly what I'm looking for. Because now, we actually don't require you to set up an extra Cloud Witness. You don't need extra infrastructure. It's actually available as an Azure service. And for doing stretch clusters between sites, that really eases that process. So we're doing a lot around connectivity in there. And then code, like I said, we'll be sharing code between Azure and Windows Server. And I'll talk about that in just a second. But the important thing is understanding that this Azure innovation is happening everywhere, and everybody is reaping the benefits, whether you're on premises or in Azure itself. So we recently announced, and we're really introducing here at TechEd, the new Microsoft Cloud Platform system powered by Dell, the Microsoft CPS system. And I'll be honest with you, I am excited out of my mind for this. This has been a project we have been working on internally within Microsoft very quietly for some time. And it's when I think about CPS, I think about it this way. If we take all of our best practices from running our own software-defined networking, our own software-defined compute, our own software-defined storage, and we put those and married those to hardware, and then built in things like our Azure Pack, all of our management, applied all of our best practices, made sure that we include templates, included roles, included the best ways to deploy our applications and workloads, and also provide an infrastructure for any applications and any workloads that you want to run, and said, by the way, here it is. That's what the Microsoft Cloud Platform System is. Thrilled out of my mind. I don't know how many times I've talked to a customer and said, you know what, we're trying to deploy a cloud, and to be honest with you, it's really hard. Okay? There's a lot of moving parts. Everywhere from firmwares to network controllers to drivers to configuring management to configuring multiple databases. What if I said, no, don't worry. We're going to just drop this off. Where do you want it? It's all pre-configured. It's all pre-ready to go. And if you have a question or support, you call Microsoft. We'll take care of you. That's one call to make. Really that simple. And this is something we've been hearing for quite a while. Honestly, Microsoft, give us a cloud, an Azure consistent cloud in a box. And that's key, Azure consistent, because it has the Windows Azure pack in there. It's ready to go. That's part and parcel of it. From a hardware standpoint, this bad boy is completely designed with resiliency, redundancy, reliability, everything in the box. There is no single point of failure anywhere in here. NICs can go bad, storage can go bad, it's okay. Up to 8,000 VMs, almost a petabyte of usable storage, and 50 to 50% lower cost per VM than the other guys. Very, very excited about this. This is built off Windows Server 2012 R2, System Center 2012 R2, and the Azure Pack. Things like orchestration and patch updates. It may sound like a simple thing, but when you have a cloud, and we're giving you this CPS, Azure Consistent Cloud, for us to do an orchestration update, we actually orchestrate the entire process. We will actually deliver you a specific way to patch everything to ensure that there's no downtime for any workloads, and it's all orchestrated completely end-to-end. We include optimized runbooks for our own applications. So we've done the work internally with all of our teams together to make sure we're giving you those optimized runbooks so when you do want to go deploy SQL, when you want to go deploy SharePoint, guess what? The optimized runbooks are already sitting there waiting for you. This is about providing an end-to-end complete solution. We are really, really thrilled about this. If you want to see this, it is downstairs. We have it actually on the show floor. Go to the Microsoft booth, and you can see the Microsoft Cloud Platform System there. And we do also have sessions this week available as well. And trust me, you need a full session at least to go into the details of how it was designed, built from the ground up. So let's start talking about some of the individual parts to how we think about software-defined data center. Starting with software-defined compute. We want to be able to confidently virtualize enterprise workloads. I'll be honest with you, this is something we did a couple releases ago, and we continue to refine this further and further. Quite simply, I don't ever want to hear the words again that say, I'm sorry, I can't virtualize this workload because I need more X. Honestly, I haven't heard that in years. Starting with 2012, we raised the numbers, the bars, the scale so high that I've yet to run into anybody who says, nah, really, Hyper-V can't handle what I need. Just doesn't happen. In fact, we haven't even changed the scale numbers from 2012 since they're so high. Industry-leading numbers for number of nodes in a cluster, number of VMs in a cluster, support for the largest systems out there. Well, when we think about enterprise workloads, it's also about making sure that we've got the best platform for traditional legacy applications, things that require traditional clustering, for example, versus a new modern cloud application that's scale out and stateless by design, and flexibility. Making sure that we can run literally everything. And I know that we said this recently, but I want to make sure I reiterate this point is, in terms of Linux, 20% of our Azure workloads are Linux. Folks, Linux runs great on our cloud. We've been contributing to Linux in the open source kernel now for a really long time, and we continue to contribute. In fact, we've got some big networking performance improvements driving 10 gigabit performance to on par with Windows now. So let's be super clear here. Whatever workload you want to run runs great on our cloud. Specifically, I've got a long laundry list here, And I'm just going to pull out a couple of ones here. So number one, if you look in the first column, the very bottom one, it says comprehensive host and guest clustering support. I want to highlight that one for just a moment. That one's actually really, really important. And the reason why is this. Because as you move to cloud, you want to be able to move every application and every workload up there. And like I said, you may be building modern stateless applications where clustering isn't a big deal, but guess what? We know there are many hundreds of billions of dollars worth of legacy applications out there that do use traditional clustering. So to do that, we want to make sure that we can take those apps to the cloud as well, which is why we've had a major focus on guest clustering in our cloud. Hyper-V offers the best guest clustering in the industry, bar none. And the reason why we did that is so that you can take those legacy apps, cluster them, guest cluster side in the cloud, and they just work. With no scale limitations, no wacky, oh, I'm sorry, you can't do this, or you can only have this many nodes, or you can only use this type of storage, all these wacky limitations. We don't have those. Guest clustering just works and runs like a champ in our cloud. Another one, look at the second column. And this one's huge. This is really big for the next version of Windows Server. Rolling upgrades, mixed mode cluster support. So you can have a cluster now and in place do an upgrade without any downtime for your workloads and go from 2012 R2 to the next release in place. This has been a long requested feature, lots of heavy lifting to make this work, and it's awesome. Because we want to make sure as we start to change the infrastructure faster because of this virtuous cycle, we want to make sure that you can adopt the infrastructure faster. And honestly, that's exactly what you should want. The VMs, they don't see any changes. Okay? Maybe they get performance changes, they get performance improvements because you upgrade the infrastructure below, and I move those VMs around, that's fine. But you should be able to make those infrastructure changes and improvements on your timeline without worrying about the VMs. And then from deploying and managing Linux as a first-class citizen, I already mentioned this, but in-guest VRSS support. So what we're doing is bringing some major performance improvements to Linux, and one of those ways to do it is by supporting virtual receive-side scaling within a Linux guest. So these are just a few of the things in terms of software-defined computing. We have our own, there's a full-on session just on software-defined compute, but I wanted to tease a few of these big items out here. Networking. Networking has been an area of intense focus for us as well. Software-defined networking in your data center. And I have to admit, a lot of people, they're still trying to wrap their head around software-defined networking. I hear a lot of buzzwords. I hear everyone talk about how great it is, and it's going to change everyone's lives and make the world a better place. But a lot of people are still struggling to understand, why do I even care? What does software-defined networking actually get me? And the answer is, it gets you agility. And it gets you mobility. It gets me the ability to actually take workloads, and maybe then I'm running them on premises, or maybe I want to move them to Azure or to a service provider. That's what you get with network virtualization, because you're decoupling the application and service from the underlying physical network. So that's a huge benefit with software-defined networking. Those are just a couple of the benefits. There are plenty more. But there are a number of things that we're doing around enhancing network reliability, performance, and interop, centralizing management, transforming the networking cloud, and enabling data center seamless data center extensions. Let me tease out a few of these. The first one, the data plane is based on Azure. Full stop. Think about this for a second. You saw in the keynote, we talked about, I believe, 17 or 19 regions we have worldwide. And each region consists of many data centers, and each data center, roughly the size of a football field, full of servers. We're running this cloud worldwide every day, and that data plane is what's running in Azure. We are taking this battle-tested, this battle-hardened data plane and providing it to you. Wow. What type of confidence do you have knowing this is what we're running on literally millions of servers every day? That's pretty awesome. Another one, native RDMA support in Hyper-V network virtualization. We are doing some truly pioneer work here. There is nobody doing what we've been doing. In 2012, we introduced support for RDMA in the scale-out file server. In 2012 R2, we introduced RDMA support for live migration. We deliver the fastest live migrations on Earth, bar none. Bar none. Now we're taking this another step further by supporting native RDMA support in Hyper-V network virtualization. What does that mean to you? It means you want 40 gigabit support? Done deal. Not only is it a done deal, but there's no additional CPU utilization because it's RDMA. I'm sorry, what other platforms have this? No. We are pushing the cutting edge on RDMA. This is really, really good stuff. You will be really, really thrilled with this. Support for VXLAN and NVGRE. We've been offering network virtualization now for a couple releases. Starting back in 2012, we introduced network virtualization. We added a multi-tenant gateway in 2012 R2. And one of the things we heard from you was, look, the other guys use VXLAN, you use NVGRE, we don't want to be in a protocol battle. And you know what? We agree with you. We don't want to be in a protocol battle. Honestly, we want to use whatever protocol works. We want to make sure that you can deploy network virtualization and remove any blockers. So if you want to use NVGRE, go for it. If you want to use VXLAN, go for it. We will support them both. It all just works. Everybody's happy. The next one, network controller based on Azure. Again, full stop. Think about this for a second. The network controller that we use that's deployed throughout our global infrastructure, battle-hardened, tested, runs at massive scale beyond anything you have, we're putting it in the box for you. Ooh, that should give you shivers how cool that is. That's part of the virtuous cycle. The next one, software load balancer based on Azure. Anybody ever anybody purchase a load balancer recently? You know how much those cost? Not the most inexpensive thing in the world, are they? Well, guess what? Again, we have our own software load balancers in Azure. We used to buy hardware load balancers, so we know exactly how much they cost, which is why we went and built software load balancers. Guess what? We're putting them in the box for you as well. So think about the technology that's coming from Azure feeding our public cloud, feeding our private cloud, and our on-premises. Distributed firewall. And then finally, things like Azure Express Route, multi-tenant edge gateways, just continuously adding more capabilities. This is just a peek at some of the things we're doing in software-defined networking. We also have sessions this week specifically on software-defined networking. So if you're interested, I highly recommend you take a look there. Storage. Oh, I love this stuff. Storage is awesome, because one thing that I've learned over the years at Microsoft, talking with lots of customers, talking with lots of you, is that there really is no such thing as a happy storage customer. Nobody ever has enough storage, it always costs too much, and they always want better performance. You just always need more. So what we're doing, and I showed this, we did this in 2012 and we did this in 2012 R2, is we've introduced these technologies like storage spaces where we're taking low-cost, high-volume hardware, but we're giving you an enterprise-class virtualized storage with storage spaces. In 2012 R2, we introduced automatic storage tiering to dramatically improve performance and scale. Well, we're going to continue to hammer on software-defined storage. We are going to drive down the cost of storage to as low as humanly possible. Perhaps you've heard it, and I'm going to say it again. We just announced unlimited storage with OneDrive on Office 365. I don't know how many people just cheering all over the web. I've been watching that on Twitter as well as in comments on websites everywhere. People are just cheering, going, I can't believe this. Unlimited storage? Yeah, you know how we do that? Software-defined storage. That's how we do it in Office 365. That's how we do it in Azure. We don't use proprietary stuff. We use standard, low-cost, high-volume hardware to deliver you storage for pennies, and now even less than that. So what we want to do is continue to drive on that. We want to make it easier to centrally manage and deploy, deliver business continuity. We've been doing this for a while. We delivered Hyper-V replica back in 2012. We wanted to make disaster recovery available for everyone. Today in the keynote, I demonstrated storage replica. Synchronous replication in the box. Could not be happier about this. Works with any storage. I could literally have two laptops and do synchronous replication. No SANs, no fiber channel, none of that. It's literally software. That's storage replica in the box. So let's dive into this a little bit. Software-defined virtualized storage, yes. SAN-like performance and availability. We'll show off some performance in just a second. Storage quads. Oh, I'm so thrilled by this one. I've been working on this one for a while. Storage quads is key, and it's a killer feature for the cloud. One of the biggest challenges in the cloud is this. If I go and put some workloads up, and I know that my storage can deliver 5,000 IOPS, how do I know that if I put 50 customers on there, that one of them isn't going to hog all the IOPS? What you need is to be able to provide storage quality of service, true IOPS storage quality of service. We are delivering that. We'll demo that in just a second. Synchronous storage replication for any volume. Again, showed that in the keynote this morning. Again, the key thing is it works with any storage. If you have a SAN, if you want to use your SAN, go right ahead. Works fine with it, but doesn't need it. Like I said, standalone servers. You can use it with clusters. And like I showed in the keynote, you can stretch clusters with synchronous replication as well. It's all software. All right. With that, I'd like to invite Patrick Lang out up here. And Patrick can show off storage quads. Patrick?
All right. Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you.
All right. So when we developed storage quality of service, we built the key technologies directly into Hyper-V and the scale-out file server role. The two big problems that we wanted to work on this release were making it easy to monitor your storage performance and then give you the tools you need to apply effective service level agreements to them. So this is live code in the technical preview, and it's already ready to run in PowerShell. So the first thing I'm doing is querying my file server to see what's running. In one place, I can see all of my virtual machines, the server they're running on, their average utilization from the last 5 minutes, as well as the file names that are being used, all in one place. This is something where, without storage quads, you would have to go to each Hyper-V server, look at each VM config, look at each file, look at each perf counter, collate that all in one place, again, over 5 minutes, just to have an idea of where to start from. So all of this is in one place. And then on the right, I've got the live storage performance counters going as well. Because the next thing I'm going to do is go ahead and create some service level agreements and apply them to the VMs. So I've created two policies. One of them is for the desktop workloads that are running on the left here of 100 to 200 IOPS. And the other one is running a SQL workload, and I want to give that one 5,000 to 7,000 IOPS. And now that that's been applied to the VMs, I can see that my SQL workload has already dropped into the range of 5,000 to 7,000, and my desktop workloads are running right where I want them, between 100 and 200. So what's next? It's time to deploy more load on this system and see how it runs. So right now, I'm starting a group of VMs on another machine. These don't have any policy applied at all. But if you watch the performance over here, everything is still running exactly the same. The policies are keeping my performance extremely consistent. So I'll give this a few seconds for my remaining VMs to start up. Now that they're all started, if I go and look at the file server again, I can immediately see all the new virtual machines that are running. I can see that they're placing some strain on the system, but everything else is still falling within the range I want, according to policy.
That's awesome, Patrick. Thank you. So what you've just seen there is applying more virtual machines, but he's still meeting the quality of service and the service level agreement promise. So if you're a service provider, or if you're running your own internal cloud where you've made commitments that you're going to have an SLA to meet a certain requirement, you can do that with confidence, knowing that's part and parcel and built right in. One other thing I wanted to show was, for the last 2 years at TechEd Europe, I've shown this in the keynote, and I just didn't have time to show this in the keynote, but I wanted to make sure we showed this. We've set some spectacular performance numbers from a single VM. In 2012, we demonstrated over 1 million IOPS from a single VM. No one's ever seen that before. We were the first ones to do it. I came back a year later, and last year I demonstrated over 1.6 million IOPS out of a single VM. Patrick, let's show them how we've been doing this year with the release of Windows Server Next. How are we doing on our IOPS performance right now? Again, this is performance from a single VM. The point here to show is we can take advantage of as much as your storage will allow. Did we not configure something right?
I don't know. Let me switch back over here.
We ran this right before, so we have the proof, and I made him do a video. We must have configured something wrong. We've actually hit now over 2 million IOPS out of a single VM. So 2 years ago, 1 million. Last year, 1.6. Now we're back with over 2.1 million IOPS out of a single VM. I don't know of any platform even remotely close to this amount of IOPS from a single VM. So we're going to continue our performance pace. We're going to continue to drive performance. And the reason why we need to do this, by the way, for our own selfish reasons, is because, again, Azure's using the same hypervisor. So we need to make sure that we deliver the best performance. So when Azure delivers you the next size bigger VM, they've got plenty of headroom to do it. So with that, let's go ahead and switch on over. And I'd like to invite Jeremy Winter up to talk about management and service delivery.
Thanks,
Jeremy?
Hey. That's some amazing progress on the platform, Jeff. Good job. Okay, so I'm Jeremy Winter. We're going to peel this over and talk a little bit about management. So when I think about infrastructure, and you think about infrastructure management, System Center is that backbone. How many of you out there today are using System Center? 2012. Let's talk about some numbers. 2012. Okay, I'm looking at about a good third of the room. Tell me about 2007 and 2010. How many people are using that today? 2007, 2010. Okay? How about just dipping your toe into it? Just thinking about it. Not a lot of hands. Okay. The reason I'm asking this question is when we think about infrastructure management and System Center as the backbone, I think about four core capabilities that you need to be thinking about with management. Provisioning, monitoring, automation, protection. These are the core pillars for System Center that we think about as we come into management. And with System Center, we bring all these capabilities together as an integrated product offering for you. Okay? As you look at a lot of the work that Jeff just announced out and talked through, Cloud Platform System, we just spent the last year working to put the management plane into that based off of System Center. Those lessons we've pulled from managing with Azure, as well as managing thousands and thousands of servers across thousands and thousands of customers, we put that into CPS for the management plane. Now we took that work, and not only is it inside the CPS system, but we've been on a quarterly update, increasing the cadence for when we bring innovation into the System Center product suite and to you. So if those that are using 2012 started to notice, we've got a cadence that's every quarter, new updates are coming across the suite. This is a mind shift that we're doing right now in management that isn't just about, hey, every 3 years you're going to get a big thing and we'll airlift it and give you a whole bunch of features, and then you need to do a massive migration. Right, there's a few I talked to beforehand that are just starting, moving from 2010 to 2012. The migrations are in the middle. Our goal is to continue to innovate with you on a faster cadence and bring you these updates of features and improvements through these quarterly updates. We'll ship another version of System Center for sure as we come into the summer with the rest of Server. But you'll also continue to get this faster cadence. That's really important to the company, and I think it's really important to be able to bring you that level of innovation. Now, we've been thinking about System Center in a couple different ways. First is really upholding that value. So we're dedicated and committed to continuing to uphold the value that you have inside your infrastructure. We'll make sure that remains. You saw the work we're doing with CPS to give you these large containers that you can come in and just have the thing up and running, so the integration is already done. Now, having my teams go through and do the integration work on CPS was a bit of an eye-opener for some of the engineers to make that all work for you that have tried to stitch together Config Manager, Backup, and Operations Manager, as well as your PowerShell. It's tough. We took over 500 improvements back into System Center, R2, the updates that are coming, as well as the next version. So we're taking those lessons and bringing them in. Okay? But let's get back and talk about infrastructure management. There's a modernization that we're doing, upholding System Center and that value, and starting to modernize. There's no doubt we're moving to the cloud. You're hearing it everywhere. And parts of what we're doing with System Center is moving to the cloud as well. So I'm going to show you here in a bit a few core components that we're starting to modernize System Center so you can take advantage of the cloud at your own pace, leveraging your on-premise, and still get the cadence. Okay? Now, the best fabric. I can be operating the best fabric, but there's another modernization shift that's happening. That fabric, while is good, I've got a lot of other pressure and demands coming from the business. So this is where we start to talk about Windows Azure Pack. There's a cultural shift that needs to happen. IT's got a ton of pressure, more demands coming from your own development teams and your own business. My developers, even in our own, as fast as we're going, are expecting real-time compute when they want it. They want VMs, they want websites, and so they want other compute resources as quickly as possible. In our own IT, we've started to go shift towards this model. I'm watching other companies do it, as well as our own Microsoft IT, and it's something you guys should be considering as well. And the concept here is to really position IT as you start to get into this private cloud element, to position IT closer to real-time service provider. Okay? This gets you real-time service delivery, and you can act much like a hoster to your own company. And now, you'll see a lot of focus on how we leverage this using Azure Pack. Jeff covered a lot of this about how Azure Pack comes in, the lessons we took, the code base, and we're putting it on top of your private cloud that's available to you. There's a session later today at 1 o'clock that's going to go deep into this, about how we can extend the Azure Pack and how you can look at using even partners to extend beyond the private cloud to even doing hybrid views within a single portal. But what it allows IT to do is get in there and start to offer up plans, templates, surface it up through a gallery that then the rest of your organization can come and use. It's a pretty big mind shift that's happening. It's something you definitely want to take advantage of, leveraging Azure Pack. Again, System Center is underneath that as the core management blade. And that'll really help with more agility and help some of this rogue IT, or what we've often heard as shadow IT. Now let's talk about another trend we're watching as we think about modernization of management. Man, big data, it's everywhere. We've got the velocity we're seeing inside environments and the growth that's happening, we're seeing an explosion of data. But that data has always been in the environments. Logs have been out there for a long time. It's a pretty straightforward way, whether we do syslogs or devices dropping their logs or even Windows. Those logs have been there. But the challenge we've had is, how do I get any value out of these things? How do I pull this together? Engineers, when they face this, our engineers, are facing literally millions and millions of events that they have to deal with every day. How do I go make sense of those? How do I can speed my time up so I don't have to remote into a server and then go check the rest of them or write custom scripts to do this? And so when I chat with customers, some of them have given me, well, the reason we haven't been able to take advantage of some of these new big data analytics approaches, I don't have that big of a staff. I don't have that big of infrastructure to go put something together and deal with the costs of that overall infrastructure. I just don't have the time. I'm just trying to keep up with the staff that I have. And so we think with Microsoft, we've got a very unique opportunity to bring to you by combining System Center and Azure. So when I look at Azure, I get hyperscale. You can shove at us whatever data you want. The amount of data we can handle, we can scale, and we can do it a heck of a lot cheaper than anyone else can do. So we've got the scale capacity to be able to bring in. The advancements of analytics, machine learning, we can bring these into the cloud, and we've got a unique situation where we can actually make the realization of a true analytics for our for your IT. And then System Center. System Center is that core of management, infrastructure management. It's changing how we monitor the environment. It allows us to take with our System Center infrastructure and quickly get you connected. And so in the keynote, for those that weren't here in the keynote as well, I know there's a few of you here, we went ahead and announced a new preview service called Microsoft Azure Operational Insights. The whole value of this Operational Insights is to take all this machine data, get it in the hands of IT ops, and allow you to troubleshoot quickly. Okay? You know, you now can look at those millions of logs, and you can do it in minutes. You don't have to go work through all those other boxes. This is one of those modernization elements that we're doing with our monitoring. You still have your System Center. You can leverage this in addition, and over time, you'll start to see us bring value between both. This isn't just Azure. This is an Azure service that you're able to do in conjunction with System Center or not, and it'll talk to machines that are managed by System Center or not on any environment. This thing can be sitting on an OS can be sitting on AWS. It can be sitting inside a VMware environment. It can be sitting Linux. It can be sitting inside a System Center managed. Okay? This is a core area that we're investing in. So why don't I pop in and show you a little demo? Sound good? Okay. So here we've got an overview of Operational Insights. This is an HTML5-based UI. It's got what you're seeing here. I'll just give you a quick tour, is multiple intelligence packs. These intelligence packs are ready-made. We've taken all that data and shoved into the system, and our teams have started to go build ready-made intelligence so you don't have to have the heavy lifting in there. If you want to know the things that are going on inside the environment, where your malware is at, where the change is going, even to the level of security, on activity of accounts that are moving, we're working on ready-made intelligence over the top of this data. Now remember I said millions of events that I have to deal with every day. This account that I've got sits here with 15.9 million records. So, if we go look at the type of servers and data that we can use, right here on the right-hand side, these are management groups. System Center Ops Manager folks, this is your bread and butter. We've seen some of the early customers that have sneaked peek with us since May. They've come in and started to use this, and we've seen customers come in within 15 minutes and be able to get things set up. Last year at TechEd, before we even had the initial sneak peek of this, there was a line at the booth to get signed up. The team had started to take their laptops and just go ahead and sign people up. One of the guys I chatted with, he started, and I bumped into him the next day in the session. You notice I was kind of walking around with the session talking. He brought in over 1,600 servers in about 20 minutes. So I was pretty impressed. We had over 10,000 servers added by the time I left TechEd a day later, and it hasn't stopped. Thousands and thousands of servers are connected and talking to this, allowing them to have the intelligence. Okay, let's do a little deeper dive here. All right, so I'm going to go back. We can flip through these intelligence packs, but I'm going to jump into search since we just showed that at the keynote, and I want to get a little deeper into search real quick. So within search, we've got rich analytics capability to go look at all the logs. These are saved searches you're seeing, whether it's capacity searches, log management searches. We've got saved searches that as you start to use the environment, you can save them as well. I'm going to go just look at the distribution of the types. So let's look at the different event types that are inside the environment. Right here I could see there's, remember, 15 million, but right here we're able to break this down into 14 different types. So you can see I've got event type, security events, IIS logs, which is one of the top asks from the early customers. They asked, we turned it around within a month and a half. real-time cadence for the services. These filters on the left allow you to start to break down the data. So if I wanted, I could just quickly look at like source. Allows me to search, quickly find source. We've already done the work for someone to see exactly where the sources are. If I wanted to go even look at, say, event level name, I could quickly look at event level name and add it. And now I know, here's the information or error successes. I don't have to build anything here. This is done for you in seconds. So if I'm needing to troubleshoot and realize, like, maybe I've got a problem with, say, group policy, I could quickly go in and look at my group policy. I'm going to go up here and play around with search a little bit so you can see it. We should be able to query down to about 400 and some thousand events. Okay? You're not having to already pee into machines. You just have it. It's readily available for you. Now, I wanted to find, where are the top computers that I'm worried about on this? We could come back in here, look at a computer. And I should be able to search. Oh, how about that, huh? I have a lifetime. Thanks. Appreciate it. Got a crowd of debugging. And it quickly allows me to look right at what are the top machines. So you have all the power inside here. I mean, there was a demo I was doing on an environment that started to go kind of run a security angle, which is looking for an error for an event 4672, which is someone changing their login permissions. Right? It has nothing to do with a specific event except with my security. You can use whichever elements of security or the events that you need. So I'm going to pull back out and show you a couple other things. Dashboard. One of the key features that we've been adding is the ability to add dashboards. So this is a dashboard for you. You can go start to build your own views into the data as you work your systems. You're going to know search. You're going to know your environment better than any of us. And so I can quickly go add dashboards. For example, let's say I need to worry about change. Change is one of those things. I just need to know what's changing inside the environment. So if I wanted to just go look at all the software changes in the environment, I just quickly drop it on. If I want to change the number, I can. Different views. We'll add more views as we go. If I wanted to set thresholds, I could quickly start to set the thresholds. So this allows you, let me go ahead and configure, to start to have your own view. And the team will continue to innovate on how we can create your own custom views. Okay. So that's a quick run through on what we're doing with operational insights. There's a couple sessions that I'd call out on this. A lot of the, we've got multiple sessions happening on the modernization of the System Center. This one's tomorrow at 4 o'clock. They're going to go deep into this, deep, deep. This morning I bumped into one of the guys that I work with that's building this, and he literally had to cut demos to make it fit into the hour. So I imagine he'll dive right into demo and just go deep, clear through how you can configure it, how you can set everything up, all the way down to the power inside it. So pretty interactive one. Another modernization system, another modernization element will be the automation. There's Azure Automation is another full session. We're not demoing that today in here, but there's a whole other session just about how to get Azure-based automation and how that work will be later into the orchestration for any of your orchestrator customers. So as we talk about modernization, I'm going to hand it over to Matt, who's going to bring us in and talk a little bit more about what we're doing in the backup and recovery side.
Thanks.
So I appreciate all your time. And
good morning. Good morning. There we go. Come on, 10 minutes until lunch. Good morning. Good morning. There we go. Excellent. So my name is Matt McSpirit, and I'm going to take you through a little look at some of our business continuity capabilities. Now, when we talk about business continuity, we're really talking about technologies, features that can really help you keep your most important workloads up and running as efficiently as possible. And now we have this focus on Azure, enhancing what we can deliver within this business continuity space. Now, Jeff did a great job earlier of talking specifically about what's changing or what's improving with clustering, that foundational fabric level resilience. You lose a Hyper-V host, workloads automatically restart somewhere else on that gigantic cluster scale that we've got in the product. But then we think about guest clustering, support for clusters like SQL Server Always On failover clusters, Exchange DAGs, and so on. inside virtual machines gives us another level of redundancy. And you'll see through the sessions this week a number of new features in clustering that are going to help increase the resiliency of your infrastructure. But then we think about actually protecting data, ensuring that your stuff is backed up, enhanced now with the cloud. So tools like Data Protection Manager within System Center help you to protect key workloads like SQL Server, SharePoint, Exchange, Hyper-V virtual machines at cloud scale. And now, through integration with Azure Backup, you can take advantage of Azure for long-term retention and move away from the use of things like tape. So it's really enhancing what you can do on-premises with the cloud. And we've made changes very recently to Azure Backup that allow your retention range now to exceed 9 years in the cloud. So very, very flexible. But what if you were to lose an entire site? Have you got a situation in your environment where you've got a disaster recovery set up, configured? Well, this is where we can help you safeguard your applications with Azure Site Recovery. And rather than talk too much on the slide, let's take a look at a demonstration of this environment. So let me just bring up my configuration. So what we have on the screen here is the Azure interface, and I'm in the recovery services view. And what I'm looking at is one of my recovery services vaults, my Azure Site Recovery vaults. And you may not have heard much about Azure Site Recovery. This may be your first time seeing it. So you're going to say, what kind of scenarios does it support? Well, if I use this little drop-down list here, and I'll zoom in, you'll see there are four key scenarios today that Azure Site Recovery can help you with. Number one, between two on-premises Hyper-V locations, Hyper-V on your site, Hyper-V on another one of your sites or a service provider, and using Hyper-V Replica as the engine, we'll replicate your data and we'll orchestrate the failover between sites with ASR. Number two, you've not got one of your second sites of your own. You want to harness Microsoft Azure as your target for DR. Well, we can help you with that, with Azure Site Recovery. And I'm going to walk through that scenario in a minute. But then you'll see there's some others that you may not have heard of. Firstly, between two on-premises VMware sites. With our acquisition of InMarge just a few months ago, we now, under the Azure Site Recovery banner, provide you the ability to replicate and recover using our Azure Site Recovery for your VMware infrastructures on-premises. The final one on there, which has just gone into preview, and you'll learn more about that this week, is utilizing array replication, so SAN replication. If you've got an investment across your data centers in SAN technology that has synchronous or asynchronous replication, we can now integrate with Azure Site Recovery for that scenario, and that's in preview. But there's one more that we're bringing to Azure Site Recovery in the not-too-distant future, and that's specifically from VMware to Azure as well. Azure is your target, VMware on-premises. So we'll have a complete collection of choices there under Azure Site Recovery to meet your needs and your disaster recovery requirements. So let's come out of there, and let's look at what I'm protecting in this particular recovery vault. Now, you'll see I've got a number of clouds on here, and cloud being the unit of protection for Azure Site Recovery. And I'll drill into this particular finance cloud, and you'll see I've got a number of virtual machines that are being protected. Currently on-premises, albeit one, we've actually failed over individually into Azure, so we can enable that hybrid configuration. And what you'll see, when they do fail over to Azure, these particular VMs will be taking an extra small size as part of their configuration. And we determine that size based on the size on-premises. If you want to change it, you can, but we do a pretty good job of looking at your on-premises VM and choosing the appropriate size in Azure for when failover occurs. Now, if I back out of there and go to the configuration of this particular cloud, you'll see some of the flexible options we have for the configuration. Firstly, in this case, our target for replication and recovery is Azure. It's grayed out at the moment because we've set that already. But you'll notice I can specify my storage account, and we've got support for encryption of data at rest, which is very important for compliance. If I scroll down a little bit, you'll notice for my replication frequency, how often I send the delta changes, we can go as low as every 30 seconds from on-premises into Azure. It's extremely flexible for those important mission-critical workloads. In addition, we can retain additional recovery points, up to 24 of those, and there's VSS integration for application-consistent snapshots. So very comprehensive support in this configuration view. But let's back out and let's take a look at some of the resources, so some of the setup that I've got to do. Because one of the most complex areas of the data center, and specifically in DR, is configuring networking. It's tricky to ensure that networks, once you fail over, are mapped effectively and that VMs communicate once failover has taken place. But Azure Site Recovery makes it easy. I'll choose my on-premises source location. I'll choose my target location, in this case Azure, and you'll see I'll get a list of my on-premises and Azure networks, and I simply map them together so that when VMs fail over into Azure, they'll be connected to that appropriate network, and they'll communicate with other VMs on that network as well. We make it incredibly easy. But one of the most important parts of any recovery is the actual recovery. But we don't want all of our virtual machines failing over uncontrolled, all in one go. We want to streamline and control in a controlled manner how those virtual workloads fail over. And to do that, we build what's known as a recovery plan. And if I look at this finance recovery plan, and these are incredibly easy to build, very UI-driven, you'll see that initially, this recovery plan will shut all of the virtual machines down cleanly. This assumes that your primary site is still online. We'll shut the VMs down cleanly, replicate the delta changes that haven't already been replicated, and then we will start the failover process. And if I expand some of these groups, group one, in this case, we're just going to start up the backend SQL VM. This is the most important VM for us in this configuration. So that one needs to start first. Then, under group two, we've injected a script that will do something with regards to that database. Check it, run some kind of test. And when that comes back, we'll proceed with the recovery plan. Next group, we bring up the middleware VM. And then finally, we bring up the front-end virtual machine. And you'll see a manual action right at the end, which is actually asking for somebody, some person, to physically do something. In this case, it could be John logging into the website to check that the line of business app is up and running. That's the flexibility we build into these recovery plans. Inject scripts, inject manual actions, build the recovery plan to model your failover as you need it. And in order to execute, if I come back out, you'll see I have simple options not only to test failover at the bottom here, but also run either a planned or an unplanned failover. We give you the flexibility depending on your scenario. And because this is HTML5 based, I could execute this failover from any browser, whether it's my phone, whether it's my server, whether it's my Xbox. It doesn't matter. I've got the flexibility. So that was a little look around Azure Site Recovery. As I said, we're supporting lots of different types of replication and recovery, and hopefully that was very interesting to you. So, time to wrap up. What you've seen and what you've heard as part of this presentation is that Azure innovation is everywhere. Compute, storage, networking, management, not only influencing our direction, but we're taking advantage in many cases of actual Azure code. We talked about Network Controller as a good example of that. Phenomenal innovation, hugely tested at scale in Azure, being brought into your on-premises infrastructure, bringing the cloud to your data center. There are lots more sessions this week to learn about some of these new capabilities, and many of these sessions were embargoed on the schedule for up until the last couple of weeks. So make sure you take a photo, take these down. These are going to be sessions that you'll want to go to if you want to learn more about the next generation of Windows Server and System Center. From the blue fabric layer, compute, networking, storage. From the green layer with CPS, the Azure Pack, the services, and Linux. And then right on top with automation, operational insights, and site recovery. There's a number of these sessions and more, so please check the most up-to-date schedules. It might be something you want to look at. And come and visit us on the booth as well. And with that, please fill out an eval. I want to thank you personally for coming along and spending the time with us. Hopefully you enjoy the rest of the show. And again, thank you very much.